Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1096, Fascism 2019 World Tour Part 6, subtitled Azov on Our Mind Part 2. This is being recorded on November 5th of the year 2019. I was going to, or would like to have, recorded another show ruminating a bit about the destabilization of China. I think what I'm going to do, however, is to craft a food for thought post and put that up on the website instead as a supplemental item, because there is just too much going on and too many different levels. It is interesting to me to see the focal point of the impeachment inquiry / proceedings focused on Ukraine, and yet the the discussion has overlooked the fundamentals. I will highlight at some point in the not-too-distant future the overlap between elements of the inquiry into impeachment / Ukraine with things we have spoken about before. Very, very quickly, there is an element of truth to the Trump camp's suspicions about the, quote, hack, unquote, of Hillary Clinton's email having been, or the DNC, I should say, having come from Ukraine. It appears to have been a cyber false flag operation. Outdated malware was used, and the hacker hard-coded their IP address into the malware, which just isn't something that your average hacker is going to do. And for the record, 891, or maybe it was 981, the Ukrainian fascist roots of the Russiagate PSYOP, we noted that the crafter of that software, which is an outdated PAS shell, was a Ukrainian nicknamed or given the title Profexer, P-R-O-F-E-X-E-R. But he was in the control or under the control of a far-right, basically fascist parliamentarian and a cabinet member in Ukraine named Anton A-N-T-O-N Gerashenko, G-E-R-A-S-C-H-E-N-K-O. He is very closely identified with the OUNB successor organizations that are in charge of the national security apparatus in Ukraine, very close to the Azov Battalion. The hacker, the brilliant Nazi hacker named Andrew Auernheimer, a.k.a. Weave, the web architect of the Daily Stormer, appears to be resident in Ukraine, and he was contacted by people of the Trump camp in order to attempt at getting a hold of Hillary Clinton's emails. Auernheimer has been linked to the doctoring of documents that were taken from France due to an alleged hack, and at the same time, the French chief of cybersecurity said that there was no hack coming from Russia into the Macron camp. So the, quote, hack, unquote, of the DNC, both have some evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of Ukraine. What is interesting beyond that is that some of the key figures involved in this very complex scenario, people like Dmytro Firtash and Igor Kolomoyskoye, are inextricably linked with not only Burisma, the Ukrainian natural gas company, which was involved in all sorts of monopolistic practices, but they have links to people who figure in the Maidan coup and the destabilization of the Yanukovych government, people like Sergei Lavoshkin, who was a business partner with Dmytro Firtash, and other members of the Burisma board, including Alexander Kwasniewski, a former president of Poland or head of state in Poland, who was a key organizer of the Habsburg group that was used or operated in conjunction with Paul Manafort to tease Ukraine from the Russian into the Western orbit. Time permitting, we will get into that in future programs. But it is more than a little interesting to me to note how our media are just tiptoeing around the fact that the current Western-oriented Ukrainian, that there is a new president, but they are basically the results of a coup d'etat and in charge of the national security apparatus, military and intelligence services, as well as things like the Institute for National Memory, are OUNB successor organizations that we have spoken about in the past. The OUNB, the fascist alliance network or milieu that are basically the Nazi proxy government that implemented Third Reich policy in Ukraine during World War II, and which then jumped in the person of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations to Western intel during the Cold War. We will get into that in weeks to come as we review something called the Intermarium Network. What we're going to do in this program is to resume our Fascism 2019 World Tour, and we will be sojourning, so to speak, for quite some time in Ukraine. And once again, we will be highlighting the international outreach and international connections of the Azov Battalion. The aforementioned Anton Gerashenko was the deputy interior minister of Ukraine, perhaps still is. And he was very close to the Azov Battalion, as well as being in charge of, quote, professor, unquote. He also was very close and a protector of the Mrotov Vets. And again, I'm sure I am mispronouncing many of these Ukrainian names. That is the Prop or Not group, a group of Ukrainian cyber fascists who have been able to wield tremendous influence in the West. However, we will be looking at the Azov Battalion in this program, and then sort of expanding or dollying out and taking a look at not only the Azov Battalion, but the Intermarium Project. That's Intermarium. It means in Latin between the seas. It was an anti-Russian, anti-Soviet political project and intelligence network overlapped with the Promethean Project and or the Promethean League and crafted by former Polish head of state Józef Piłsudski. We will also be looking at how individual fascists from around the world, including the U.S., have been networking with the Azov Battalion and using the political and military skills they developed there to as Bob Dylan noted in one of his albums in the 60s, bring it all home. And beyond that, we will be reviewing in weeks to come the geopolitical position of Ukraine in the Earth Island and how networks associated with the Azov Battalion, networks associated with the OUNB successor organizations, organizations dating back to the pre-World War II period, running through World War II, through the Cold War and up to the present, are seeing Ukraine as perhaps the geopolitical epicenter of a worldwide fascist revolution. We will also be touching in future programs on Yaquiite fascism. That is a reference to Francis Parker Yaqui. I have interviewed the brilliant Kevin Coogan many times and used his vitally important book, Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yaqui and the Post-War Fascist International, on many programs. Those are all archived. That book, again, Dreamer of the Day, is one of the, so to speak, must-read books if one is to understand global and contemporary fascism. It is not an easy read, but it is well worth the effort. More about Yaquiism, however, in weeks to come. President Zelensky of Ukraine has been attempting to work out a political settlement with Russia to end the war in the eastern provinces of Ukraine. That is being opposed by, among others, former President Petro Poroshenko, but he is working with and networking with Poroshenko, that is, many of the OUNB's successor fascist organizations in Ukraine, and Azov Battalion has actually stated that they have taken up positions in one of the towns bordering, or one of the towns that occupies a strategic position on the front lines of the civil war in Ukraine. And they have stated that they will not abandon that position. I have not heard an update, but we will discuss that and examine not only that, but some of the other machinations of the Azov Battalion. The Azov Battalion, by the way, is an overtly Nazi unit in the Ukrainian army. It has received, despite the fact that that is technically illegal, arms and training from the Pentagon. They sport the swastika and the SS rune on their combat helmets, and the chief spokesperson for the Azov Battalion is a guy named, Roman Zvarych, Z-V-A-R-Y-C-H. I may be getting the first name wrong, but Mr. Zvarych, was the personal secretary in the early 1980s to, Yaroslav Stetsko, the World War II head of state in Ukraine and the head of the Nazi collaborationist government there. He then became the head of the ABN and the OUNB in the post-war period. Yes, I believe there is Roman Zvarych. We will come back to him. Zvarych, as Yaroslav Stetsko's secretary in the early 1980s, represents a link between the Ukrainian fascism of the World War II period, right on up through the Cold War, and into the present period. He also was Minister of Justice, the equivalent of Attorney General under the Yushchenko government and both Tymoshenko governments in Ukraine. More about that, however, later.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
From The Guardian of October 14th of 2019 by Andrew Roth, R-O-T-H, far-right and nationalists march in Kiev to oppose East Ukraine peace plan. It reads in part, thousands of people have joined the march through Kiev, led by far-right groups and nationalist parties, to protest against changes to a peace plan for East Ukraine that they have called a, quote, capitulation, unquote, to Russia. Police deployed around Ukraine's capital closed off several major avenues for the demonstrations, as the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged participants to avoid violence. He also warned that images from the protests could be used by Russian state media to discredit Ukraine. The last sentence is quite amusing. In the written description for this program, I'm going to include a photograph which was in For the Record 1072. It is a photograph of the summer of 2018 celebration in Lvov, Ukraine, of the founding of the 14th Waffen-SS Division, the Galician Division. And there are three people in World War II SS uniforms and a Ukrainian honor guard marching in the background, again, celebrating the founding of this Waffen-SS Division. Russian state media don't have to do anything to discredit Ukraine. Things like that are about as discrediting as anything could possibly be. Skipping down in this article, after discussion of the fact that former Ukrainian president and the oligarch supreme Petro Poroshenko is working with the far right and fascist groups to oppose the peace plan, the article says, the protests are part of a backlash against Zelensky's policies on the war against Russian-backed separatists in East Ukraine. This month, the president approved a plan that would allow elections in separatist-held Ukraine and then grant special status to the region on the condition the vote was seen as free and fair. Skipping down. Zelensky has sought a compromise with nationalist groups and reportedly met last week with the leaders of veterans organizations as well as prominent far-right leaders. Many are controversial. On Sunday night, the Ukrainian Prime Minister Oleksiy Honcharuk, H-O-N-C-H-A-R-U-K, probably mispronouncing that, spoke at a rally in support of veterans, reportedly organized by Andrei Medvedko, M-E-D-V-E-D-K-O, a prominent member of the radical nationalist organization C-14. Sukhara Peruna, S-O-K-Y-R-A-P-E-R-U-M-A, a white nationalist metal band whose supporters have made Nazi salutes at their concerts, also played at the bar where the event was held. And skipping ahead here, talking about how the Azov Battalion has openly opposed the peace plan and has taken up positions on the front line that they have refused to abandon. From the Stratfor Worldview of October 8th of 2019, Ukraine, Zelensky's peace effort encounters resistance, unquote. Ukraine has been trying to resume negotiations to resolve the conflict in eastern Ukraine and implement a proposed political settlement. The withdrawal of forces from the contact line is one of the first steps on the roadmap to peace, but this step has proven a difficult one to take. Developments continue to muddy progress toward resuming the so-called Normandy format to try to settle the conflict in Ukraine. Representatives of the separatist Luhansk People's Republic informed observers with the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe that the group would be ready to begin withdrawing its forces on October 9th. The date was delayed 2 days when Ukraine postponed the pullout of some of its own forces because of artillery fire between both sides in the conflict in eastern Ukraine. At the same time, the Azov Battalion, a right-wing pro-Ukrainian paramilitary group, announced on October 7th that it was taking up positions in Zolotoe, capital Z-O-L-O-T-O-E, a village on the line of contact. Ukrainian forces would likely have to leave Zolotoe as part of a withdrawal, but the Azov Battalion's leader has said his forces will not abandon the village. It remains to be seen. I have not heard any update about that, but with the Azov Battalion being a formidable armed organization, if they open fire on the line of contact, that in and of itself may very well scuttle the peace agreement. I also think that observers need to be aware of the possibility of provocation in connection with scuffling attempts at settling the civil war in Ukraine. There was a really, to me anyway, interesting post on the Bellingcat blog, capital Bellingcat, of October 21st of 2019. Bellingcat has relentlessly flogged the new Cold War anti-Russian propaganda, openly ignoring or blatantly ignoring evidence that the shoot-down of MH Flight 17 was actually done by elements in Ukraine. And generally, Bellingcat has had a low credibility in connection with the Maidan and post-Maidan events. It is interesting to me to see them beginning to come around, at least in a couple of articles. They noted that the shooter in, that Mr. Parent, the shooter in Christchurch, appears to have had some Ukrainian links and was attempting to precipitate a crackdown on firearms ownership in the U.S., which he felt would lead to a fascist revolution or uprising in the United States. That is in keeping with the scenario presented in the Truman Diaries. There is an article here titled How to Mainstream Neo-Nazis, a lesson from Ukraine's new government, that basically lays it on the line in terms of the presence and the sanctioning of, the presence in and sanctioning of Nazi and fascist groups by the Ukrainian government. Why they are changing their tune is a matter of speculation. I wonder if perhaps they are now attempting to discredit Mr. Zelensky because of the fact that he is willing to negotiate with President Putin and the Russians, and if a plebiscite shows sentiment for that to grant semi-autonomous status to the breakaway Ukrainian republics in the East. They are populated by ethnic Russians. They speak Russian. And in addition to rejecting the pro-OUNB stance of the current governments in Ukraine, or current and recent governments in Ukraine, they speak Russian. And when Russian was basically outlawed, Russian media, the use of Russian in schools and in official communications, although the post-Maidan governments have attempted to walk that back somewhat, that did not sit well with the Russian speakers in the East. So, for whatever reason, the previously gung-ho pro-new Cold War anti-Russian blog out of the UK called Bellingcat is at least in this article beginning to tell the truth. From October 21st of 2019, How to Mainstream Neo-Nazis, a lesson from Ukraine's new government. On October 13th, photographs started circulating across social media showing a man resembling Ukrainian Prime Minister Oleksiy Honcharyk. Apparently it was him, but that's Bellingcat here, a man resembling Ukrainian Prime Minister Oleksiy Honcharyk. That was like if Donald Trump showed up at a Nazi veterans rally and saying, social media showed a man resembling Donald Trump. There are not a lot of men who resemble Donald Trump. It was Ukrainian Prime Minister Oleksiy Honcharuk. So I just say, this is Bellingcat's. This is Bellingcat being Bellingcat here, I think. Beginning again, on October 13th, photographs started circulating across social media showing a man resembling Ukrainian Prime Minister Oleksiy Honcharuk on stage at the Veterans Strong concert in Kiev. This was, however, no ordinary concert. It was organized by a far-right figure accused of murder and headlined by a neo-Nazi band. As later posts throughout the evening would show, including the Prime Minister's own post on Facebook the next day, the politician did indeed attend and take the stage at an event organized by Ukrainian far-right groups. The Prime Minister wasn't the only cabinet member from Ukraine's new government to be there. The Minister of Veterans Affairs, Oksana Kolyada, K-O-L-I-A-D-A, joined Prime Minister Honcharuk at the concert and even promoted the event in a Facebook post the day before it took place. In the week following the event, Honcharuk has defended his appearance at the Veterans Strong concert and has not issued an apology or expressed regret. In his Facebook post, Honcharuk complained about, quote, some media outlets putting forth ambiguous theses, unquote, and that, quote, politicization of the event was, quote, absolutely inappropriate. Basically a Nazi event. I don't think one could really speak about such an event as being politicized from the outside. I would also note that Katerina Krook from the same Svoboda milieu is now in charge of Facebook's screening operations in Ukraine. She was a member of Svoboda, one of the OUNB's successor organizations that wielded profound influence not only at the Maidan, but during the in the post-Maidan governments. The aforementioned C-14, or Combat 14, is the militia, the cadre of Svoboda. Skipping down in the article. The episode is a further example of how Ukraine's far right continues to be normalized by top leaders in the country. Not only are Ukraine's top ministers attending events organized by far right figures, they have also had a literal seat at the table with Zelensky discussing his plans for de-escalating the war in eastern Ukraine. Simultaneously, far-right organizations across Ukraine have taken the lead in organizing no capitulation protests against Zelensky's soon-to-be-launched talks with Russia, thus wielding an outsized level of influence in Ukrainian society, despite the fact that Ukrainian far-right organizations lack any popular or electoral support. This last point is worth noting. They don't have much. They have not polled well in the elections. It would appear it is difficult, given the complete lockdown in the West, of any real discussion of the Nazi character, Nazi manifestation, and Nazi heritage of these OUNB successor organizations, but they certainly do not appear to have a lot of support among the Ukrainian population. There is some, but the attacks on media figures, both actual physical and attacks on media and journalists, including some that have been lethal, as well as attempts by organizations like the aforementioned Merot Tovetz, or Prop or Not organization, to censor the media and the internet. It would appear that a lot of Ukrainians basically are not pleased with the presence of the OUNB successor organizations in command of the military and security services and the intelligence agency. The former deputy commander of the Azov Battalion, Vadim Troyan, heads up the national police. And glory to the heroes, glory to the Ukraine is the official salute of the Ukrainian army and the Ukrainian police. So the influence is unmistakable and really dominant in the Ukrainian national security and police establishment, but that would appear to be in conflict with the sentiment of many, if not most, of the Ukrainian citizenry.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Continuing with analysis from the Bellingcat Post. The driving force behind the Veterans Strong Party was Andrei Medvedko, again M-E-D-V-E-D-K-O, a leading member of the neo-Nazi Combat 14 or C-14 organization that is named for the 14 words of David Lane. Medvedko leads the Union of Veterans of the War with Russia, unquote, a group affiliated with Combat 14. Medvedko is one of two men charged with the murder of pro-Russian reporter Oleg Buzyna, B-U-Z-Y-N-A, in 2015. The trial started almost 2 years ago, and legal proceedings continue to be under pressure and scrutiny from far-right groups. As we revealed in our previous investigation in July of 2019, Medvedko has been linked to an informal C-14-linked vigilante group, Knights of the City, reportedly involved with incidents of violence aimed at those it deems to be addicts or alcoholics, unquote. As discussed in our investigation of Combat 14, the organization hosted a football tournament in 2011, quote, for white children only, unquote, that included the white supremacist 14 words slogan at the bottom of the post, which is also an element of the name of the organization itself. According to Vyacheslav Likachev, a researcher of the far right, this post was written by Medvedko himself. Medvedko's role in organizing the October 13th event was acknowledged by multiple individuals on social media. Combat 14 leader Yevhen Karas, K-E-R-A-S, acknowledged Medvedko's role in a Telegram post. That's the Telegram from the UK, while also noting that Prime Minister Hansharuk was in attendance. C-14 seemed pleasantly surprised to have Hansharuk there. The Prime Minister has come to the Veterans Party, unquote. C-14's Sergei Bondar posted on Facebook with the scream emoji. In a now-deleted reply to a Facebook post, Medvedko made his appreciation of the headliner's Saturna Peruna Perun's, P-E-R-U-N's, acts, unquote, clear. In response to a video of the band's performance, Medvedko posted, quote, 88, neo-Nazi code for Heil Hitler. This comment was made after Medvedko posted a photo of Ukraine's prime minister in attendance. The headlining band at the event was Sakura Peruna, led by Arseny Bilodub, B-I-L-O-D-U-B, born Klimichev, a man with a long history with Ukraine's neo-Nazi scene. While two other bands played at the event, Como Venise, V-N-Y-Z, a band that has played alongside Sakira Peruna in the past, and Fram, F-R-A-M, a mainstream band, it was clear well beforehand that Sakira Peruna was the main event, as even the event's Facebook page features Bilodub. Bilodub, again B-I-L-O-D-U-B, has been a fixture of Ukraine's neo-Nazi scene since the 1990s. Along with fronting Sakira Peruna, Bilodub runs the neo-Nazi fashion label Sastone, S-T-A-S-T-O-N-E, whose clothes are a common sight at any far-right gathering in Ukraine. The clothing sold by Sastone does not pretend to be anything other than white supremacist, as seen in the "White Baby, the Future of Our Race" shirt below, with a dual brass knuckles pacifier graphic selling for $9. Earlier this year, Bilodub organized the Fortress Europe concert in Kiev, a concert that featured multiple neo-Nazi bands, including American band Blue Eyed Devils, whose former guitar player murdered 6 people in a 2012 hate crime. In his Facebook post the day after the event, Prime Minister Hancharuk said he had never heard of Sakira Peruna and didn't know who would be playing at the event. Moreover, he added that it wasn't in his position as Prime Minister to dictate to our veterans what songs they should sing. Looking at what Sakira Peruna has released over the years, there's no shortage of songs from the band's back catalog that Hancharuk would probably prefer them not to sing. One of the songs is 6 Million Words of Lies, a song that exhorts listeners to deny the Holocaust and adds that, quote, "the time of reckoning, a holy war is coming," unquote. Another song is called Zogland, a reference to the Zionist occupation government, an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory in which Bilodub laments that people have forgotten the 14 words, a notorious neo-Nazi slogan that, as mentioned above, concert organizer Andrei Medvedko is familiar with as well. And the lyrics here to that: "Who is guilty? Who sold Ukraine? Jews are walking in the streets, writing laws, ruling the state," unquote, Bilodub sings in Zogland. This line becomes particularly offensive when considering how Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is Jewish. Other lines sung by Sakira Peruna's Bilodub are no less objectionable. Quote, "Forest and fields where Aryans lived now are Jewish. We can't forgive that," end quote. "You act like a nigger, you dress like a monkey, you eat bananas and climb palm trees. Are you a white person? It's a disgrace. The race war will begin with you," unquote. It should therefore come as little surprise that Nazi salutes are a common sight at Sakira Peruna concerts. And Sakira Peruna's set, "More Nazi Salutes, All a Short Walk from Maidan," on a Saturday night. At a September concert in central Kiev, Sakira Peruna fans give Nazi salutes to Sakira frontman Arseny Bilodub on stage, that from a Instagram post. The appearances by Prime Minister Oleksiy Hancharuk and fellow cabinet member Oksana Kolyaba at an event organized and headlined by known far-right figures are not isolated incidents. As Ukraine's war with Russian and Russian-led forces enters its sixth year, Ukraine's far-right continues to hijack the understandably emotionally charged issue of veterans' fighting in eastern Ukraine to spread their own intolerant rhetoric. Another example of this trend was on display in early October at the meeting with President Volodymyr Zelensky, when members of the far right, including Combat 14 leader Yevhen Karas, were invited to offer their perspective on the war in eastern Ukraine. The Azov Battalion was also present, being the largest far-right group in Ukraine that also has a regiment in Ukraine's National Guard. Quote, "Yesterday I met with veterans," Zelensky said in early October. National Corps, the Azov Movement's political party, Azov, everyone else, unquote. A photo from the meeting shows multiple far-right figures in attendance, including Combat 14's Yevhen Karas and Dmytro Shapokovsky, head of the Azov-linked Veterans Brotherhood, unquote. Meeting with veterans of the ongoing war in eastern Ukraine is, of course, not only legitimate, but necessary for President Zelensky. This is especially true when considering controversy over the so-called Steinmeier formula. However, why does Zelensky meet with multiple representatives of far-right groups and, moreover, speak of them simply as, quote, veterans, unquote, discounting the vast majority of Ukraine's veterans who have no involvement with extremist organizations? By the way, that may or may not be true. One really cannot tell in the West, due to the aforementioned media lockdown. I would note that the official salute now of the Ukrainian army is glory to the heroes or glory to Ukraine. Maybe the other way around, glory to Ukraine, glory to the heroes. That is the salute of the OUNB from World War II. So there certainly is a broad-based Nazi and fascist influence within the Ukrainian military. Continuing with the Bellingcat Post, why are there multiple members of far-right groups, including people who are openly neo-Nazi, on Ukraine's Ministry of Veterans Affairs Public Oversight Council? Maybe that's because of people like Vadim Troyan and the Azov Battalion and the others. Despite the fact that these far-right organizations have negligible popular support and virtually non-existent electoral power, they are overrepresented among veterans' rights groups, including in meetings directly with Ukraine's president. As the Veterans Concert shows, these issues are symptoms of a much larger problem relating to the far-right's exploitation of veterans' issues as they continue to have success mainstreaming themselves in Ukrainian politics and society. I would note, again, the Institute of National Memory, which is completely whitewashing history, Ukraine's history during World War II, and the lustration laws, which make the accurate retelling of the Nazi and fascist alliance of the OUNB and the UPA a crime in Ukraine. That may have something to do with it.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Talking about the Azov Battalion, and again, recall that in the Stratfor article from October 8th, Azov Battalion has taken up positions on the front line in the east and has vowed not to retreat. I have not heard an update on that. They would appear that they are intent on sabotaging the peace process. Whether they can do so successfully remains to be seen. What we're going to look at next, and perhaps we will have to continue with this in our next program, but that is the Azov Battalion's continued outreach to fascist and Nazi elements outside of Ukraine. This includes not only people who have gone to Ukraine to fight with Azov and then return to their native countries, and there are some 17,000 foreign fighters in Ukraine, but also there is an official outreach termed their Intermarium Project with fascist elements around the elsewhere in Europe, and we are going to talk about their links with Croatia and some of the neo-Ustashi elements in Croatia. I will put links in the written description for that show. We've talked about that in many other broadcasts, including, for the record, 902. Note again that the Azov Battalion's proposals for a foreign region are tied to what they call their Intermarium Project. The Intermarium was a project between the wars put together by Józef Piłsudski, the head of state of Poland, to oppose the Soviet Union and ostensibly at least to oppose the Third Reich and Germany. However, many of those networks ultimately were subsumed or co-opted by the Third Reich and later became part of the Galen Milieu and the ABN Milieu in the Cold War, still networking with elements of Western intelligence, including CIA, BNB, and MI6. So as we discuss the Azov Battalion's proposals for a foreign legion, note that this is part of their Intermarium Project. And we are going to, in future programs, maybe in 2 or 3 weeks, get to the Neo-Intermarium Project at examining its history and also its reincarnation in Europe and in the world island. From the Balkan Insight blog of July 18th of 2019, this by Michael Colburn, C-O-L-B-O-R-N-E, Croatia, key to Ukrainian far-right's international ambitions, we read, a far-right militant movement in Ukraine is forging ties with like-minded politicians and war veterans in European Union member Croatia, a Balkan Insight, a BIRN investigation reveals. Chain-smoking in a Zagreb cafe, 43-year-old Denis Soler, S-E-L-E-R, would hardly stand out were it not for the word Azov emblazoned in Cyrillic on the front of his gray sweater. Soler is a native of the Croatian capital and a veteran of the 1991 to 1995 Croatian War. But his sweater spoke to a more recent fight and to Soler's enduring allegiance to a far-right militant movement with Europe-wide ambitions. In 2014 and 2015, Soler was among 20 to 30 Croatians who fought as part of the Azov Volunteer Battalion against Russian-backed rebels in eastern Ukraine in a war that has killed some 13,000 and rumbles on today, despite an official ceasefire. From the Balkans, Serb fighters sided with the rebels out of fealty to Serbia's fellow Orthodox ally Russia, while Croatian nationalists like Soler found common cause with the far-right elements of Ukraine's resistance against Moscow. But while the war in Ukraine's steel and coal belt bordering Russia may have settled into a tense stalemate, Azov is building in momentum, forging ties with far-right extremists beyond Ukraine's borders. And Croatia, the newest member of the European Union and a country where conservative currents are strong, is emerging as a key staging ground, according to the findings of a BIRN investigation. and again in many shows, including For the Record 902, as well as 154, we have spoken about the Neo-Ustashi influence in Croatia. I will put some links in the written description for this broadcast. Continuing. The Azov Battalion's political wing is forging ties with a right-wing Croatian political bloc that made a strong showing in European elections in May, and the Ukrainian movement will hold a conference in Zagreb in September, at which it may unveil plans for a foreign legion, unquote, of far-right sympathizers built with the help of a Croatian war veteran. Quote, the Azov movement is growing, and they are growing up fast, unquote, said Soler. Back in 2014, Soler described the war in Ukraine as part of a, quote, struggle for the white European race, its culture, and history, unquote. 5 years on, Azov's ambitions have found fertile soil in Croatia, where Soler said the movement would further its dream of building a, quote, Europe of the nations, unquote. In 2014, after popular protests brought down Ukraine's then pro-Russian president, the country's army found itself helpless against a Russian move to annex Crimea and foment war in the eastern Donbass region, by the way. We've pointed out that they did not annex Crimea. Crimea had been part of Russia for 150 years. They speak Russian there, and they teach Russian in the schools, and their media are Russian, and when the aforementioned practical ban on the use of the Russian language was instituted, although there have been attempts at walking that back, that settled the hash for Crimea, which had been trying to reunite with Russia for a long time prior to that. Plus, the people in Crimea were less than thrilled with the open manifestations and return of the OUNB Nazi allies to power in Ukraine. Not a shot was fired in Crimea, and again, we've spoken about that in past programs. Continuing, volunteer battalions rushed to the country's defense, among them Azov. The unit soon earned a reputation as one of the most battle-committed, but also for its open-door policy to unabashed neo-Nazis. Far-right groups in Ukraine grew in prominence with their role in the overthrow of President Viktor Yanukovych, arming barricades in the cauldron of Kiev's Maidan Nezavisny Independence Square, during months of freezing cold and finally fatal confrontation with police. By the way, the evidence that there were provocations there is overwhelming, as we have looked at in For the Record 1023, among other shows. I will put some links in that as well. There certainly are Russian special forces and some light arms supporting their fellow ethnic Russians in the eastern provinces of Ukraine, but to portray this as a Russian invasion, when in fact it would be rather like if Mexico had waged a brutal war of occupation with the U.S., killing millions of Americans, and then decades later reoccupied Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and Southern California, and began glorifying the Mexican occupation forces from the previous war and banning the use of English in the schools, media, and in conversation. But for all intents and purposes, outlawing the English language. Well, how do you think the people in New Mexico, Arizona, and Southern California would react? Well, that's how they reacted in eastern Ukraine, where they are Russian. Continuing. 5 years on, the battalion is now formally known as the Azov Regiment and is part of Ukraine's National Guard, a gendarmerie-type force that reports to the Interior Ministry. It also has a political wing, the National Corps, a paramilitary unit called the National Militia, a youth corps, sports bar, gymnasiums, and a social center, unquote, known as Cossack House, just off the Maidan. The political wing is polling below the threshold to enter parliament in parliamentary elections in July. In Ukraine, the far right takes much of its inspiration from Stefan Bandera, commander of the Underground Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, during World War II. Many Ukrainians see the OUN as heroes who defended Ukrainian independence, downplaying what a number of leading historians of the Holocaust argue was the group's fascist tendencies. Those are some rather pronounced tendencies, and the role of some OUNB members in aiding the Nazi killing of Jews. Likewise, Croatia is grappling with World War II revisionism that has moved from the political fringes to the mainstream, questioning the crimes committed under fascist leaders of a short-lived independent Croatian state that was a puppet of Nazi Germany. Nationalists from both Croatia and Ukraine see much in common in their countries' recent histories. For them, Croatia's fight for independence in the early 1990s against Serb rebels backed by its larger neighbor Serbia has echoes in the ongoing fight against Russian-backed forces in eastern Ukraine. On a more sentimental, subconscious level for Croats, Ukraine is a friend, unquote, said Tomislav Sunic, S-U-N-I-C, a Croatian-American writer described as the intellectual guru, unquote, of the Croatian far right. Under Olena Semyonaka, International Secretary of the National Corps, Azov has staged a number of gatherings and conferences and developed relationships and connections with far-right groups across Europe, including the neo-Nazi National Democratic Party, or NDP, in Germany, and the neo-fascist Casa Pound movement in Italy. In March of this year, the SUFON Group, a New York-based organization that conducts security analysis, described Azov as, quote, a critical node in the transnational right-wing violent extremist network. Azov hosts an annual Pan-Europa conference for allies from Western Europe, as well as an annual Intermarium conference aimed at Central and Eastern Europe, mainly those countries that were once behind the Iron Curtain or part of a socialist Yugoslavia. In September, Azov is taking the Intermarium conference on the road for the first time to Denis Soler's Zagreb. Intermarium, or between the seas, unquote, is a regional security concept first touted by Poland's post-World War I leader Józef Piłsudski in the early 1930s. Kiev-based researcher Aleksandra Wieschardt said Azov had given the idea new life, promoting it as a springboard to build an East European confederation of right-wing nationalist ethno-states free from what Azov perceives as the cultural Marxism, unquote, of the EU and the neo-Bolshevism of Russia. Wieschardt, W-I-S-H-A-R-T, a graduate student at the University of Glasgow and National University of Kiev Moila Academy, said Croatia was central to Azov's plans. Croatia is a key player within the Balkans and central enough to help neutralize Russian or EU influence there, said Wieschardt, who attended the October 2018 Intermarium conference in Kiev as an observer. Soler confirmed Zagreb would hold the conference, host the conference, bringing together delegates from Ukraine, Poland, the Baltic states, Norway, Denmark, and Sweden, he said. It will be a chance to cement developing ties between Azov and the Croatian sovereignists, an alliance of far-right parties, which has come in a surprise third in Croatia in European Parliament elections in May. We will continue with this article in our next program, and then in a week or two, we will talk about the Intermarium concept in greater depth. However, this concludes For the Record program number 1096, Fascism, 2019 World Tour, Part 6, Azov on Our Mind, Part 2. This is being recorded on November 5th of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.